You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. Tonight's show is being underwritten by United Steelworkers District 11 and Blake and Ulick. United Steelworkers District 11, representing 35,000 members in the Midwest, protecting workers' rights and organizing the unorganized. We support union-made products. Since 1972, Blake and Ulick has prided itself on providing comprehensive legal representation to labor organizations and their affiliated benefit funds on a local, regional, and national basis. We thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, Ann Feeney was the most celebrated singer-songwriter of the labor movement for the last 40 years. We'll celebrate her life with stories about Ann and her music for the entire show.
Was it Cesar Chavez or Rosa Parks that day? Some say Dr. King or Gandhi that set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see that if you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand, cause singing and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
That was Peter, Paul, and Mary singing Ann Feeney's classic song, Have You Been to Jail for Justice? I'm Judy Ansel, and tonight we're devoting the entire show to remembering, mourning, and honoring Ann Feeney, who died last month of COVID in Pittsburgh, her hometown. She was a great musician who sang for the labor movement and social justice wherever she went. Many people can say Ann was a friend of theirs, and she was a friend of mine. She frequently came through Kansas City for concerts, and she often brought a young musician she was educating on the musician's life on the road. Sometimes she was on her way to the Kerrville Music Festival. Fool Killer Folk and KKFI both sponsored concerts here for her. She usually stayed at my house. Anne always made you feel like you were special. She had charisma on stage and off. Her dedication to the movement was tangible. There was no bullshit. She told you straight what she thought. She'd call out corporate scoundrels and sometimes labor betrayers, and she was always true to her brothers and sisters in the labor movement and the unorganized who day in and day out make this country run. Anne traveled everywhere, wherever there was a labor struggle. Her gift was to be able to lift spirits, help people carry on with her music, her wit, and her stories. She reminded me of Mother Jones, who over 100 years ago traveled from strike to strike, sweatshop to sweatshop, organizing and inspiring. Indeed, Anne was a kind of musical Mother Jones, inspiring embattled strikers to hold on and raising money for them wherever she went. On tonight's show, we're going to hear from people who knew and loved Anne and have our own memorial. More than any other musician, you've heard her music over 30 years on this show. Tonight, you'll hear some of it again, along with stories about Anne by David Rovics, Bill Claus, Elise Bryant, Michael Savoir, Mike Elk, Jeff Humfeld, and my daughter, Carrie Ansel. We'll start with singer-songwriter David Rovix.
Remembering Ann Feeney. On February 3rd, 2021, Ann Feeney died in the hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with her children at her side. She was 69 years old. She was a cancer survivor in poor physical health when she fell and broke her back a month ago, and in the hospital, she contracted COVID-19, then pneumonia. Although Ann died too young, she lived a long life. She lived many lives during those 69 years, really, and she cheated death at least a couple times during her last decade on Earth. As I set out to write some words about my old and very dear friend, colleague, and fellow worker, that's wobbly for comrade, I feel compelled to note, first, that this is only going to be one of many remembrances of Ann Feeney that will be written by many different people. Ann personally knew many thousands of people around the world. Many of them she spent a lot of time with over many decades and knew very well. A much larger number of people have listened to her music over the course of those decades and thus had her in their lives in all sorts of other important ways. As has been noted in the local Pittsburgh paper, as well as in Rolling Stone, Ann was born in 1951 and spent her childhood in Pittsburgh. One of her earlier musical appearances, when she was still a teenager, was captured in a beautiful photograph in 1969, where she's singing a Phil Oakes song at an anti-war protest with her recently purchased Martin guitar. The Pittsburgh that Ann grew up in was still one of the main centers of the steel industry in the world, and one of the most vibrant centers of labor activism in the U.S. Ann's grandfather, William Patrick Feeney, was also a musician and a labor organizer with the United Mine Workers of America in West Virginia, several mountain ranges south of Pittsburgh. One of the unfinished projects of Ann's latter years was a biography of her grandfather. Of course, I didn't know Ann when she was a child. I was born in 1967. And when I was growing up, and Ann was a young adult living in Pittsburgh, she had a whole life of which I only have secondhand knowledge for the most part, and I'll leave it to other people to talk about that. Ann was a lawyer for the working class for many years, as was her first husband, Ron, with whom she had two kids, both now accomplished people in their 30s, who both went on to pursue very similar interests as their parents. Ann's second career, or third career, depending on how these things are measured, is the one I have some familiarity with. Her career as a touring musician, briefly interrupted by a stint as the president of the Pittsburgh Musicians Union, which she really did not enjoy, as I distinctly recall. It's easy to remember the first time I heard Ann's music because it made such an impression on me. It was a demonstration in Boston at Government Center circa 1993. Something having to do with labor issues, I don't remember what, but through the sound system in the largely empty, sterile space in front of the building was emanating some wonderful music. I asked one of the organizers who it was, and she told me, Ann Feeney. I don't remember which songs they were playing, but in retrospect, it must have been Ann's kick-ass 1992 debut album of contemporary labor songs, Look to the Left. Ann didn't start making albums until she was in her 40s. So she was already an experienced musician by 1992, and most definitely an experienced labor activist. That album, as with all the albums she put out under her name in the years after it, is a brilliant mix of obscure cover songs and finely honed original compositions recorded with a collection of really talented musicians, all of whom were union members who got paid well for their time, of course. In almost all of the remembrances and obituaries I've been coming across since an hour after Ann died, she is referred to as a folk singer or a folk musician. I don't want to split hairs, and it is most definitely true that Ann loved all sorts of traditional music and played bluegrass herself. And largely for financial reasons, like so many other artists out there, she mostly toured solo, just with a guitar. However, if you listen to her recordings, you'll figure out right away that Ann was not just a brilliant live raconteur and folky, but also a rocker and a great team player, getting material together with bands that really sounded like bands, which is not necessarily the norm among singer-songwriters from the folk scene who make an album with a band. The 1990s is a long time ago now, and my memories about times that far back are a lot less sharp than they once were, so I'm not quite sure when I first met Anne. But the first time I spent any amount of time with her was in the summer of 1997 at the Kerrville Folk Festival in the Texas Hill Country. I was there at the invitation of my old friend Chris Chandler, who would later become Anne's touring partner and musical co-conspirator for many recording projects as well, spanning a decade. But for this summer, I was Chandler's backup band, which became a four-piece by the end of the 18-day festival, before we all crammed into a pickup truck and hit the road together. The more prominent artists who played at Kerrville tend to just hang around for a night or a weekend, but the dedicated ones, known locally as Kerrverts, spend the entire 18 days of the long folk festival every year camping in the dust. I don't remember if Anne's presence camping with us for the whole duration was a surprise to me at the time or not, but what I distinctly recall is that most people at the festival knew Anne mainly from the context of this festival and the broader folk music scene around it. Whereas for me, she was already a musical legend of the labor movement, and most of these apolitical folk musicians were less on my radar than folks like Anne and Chris were. The political musical cross-pollination that Anne facilitated at her Camp Revolution at Kerrville was representative of the ecumenical one big union orientation that she approached most everything with. She was an extrovert and an organizer, always gathering forces, always building, cheerleading, winning hearts and minds, working on projects related to organizing, music, and popular education, looking impatiently to a future where we might stop losing all the time. Whatever audience she was singing for, whether it was octogenarian coal miners, trans-vegan punks, or tree-hugging hippies, she always did her best to communicate with them, always learning about what was happening locally, not just to impress whoever was hiring her, but in that constant effort to build bridges through music and storytelling. From that festival in Texas until a few years ago, no year would be complete without several encounters with Anne, each one usually in a different part of the world, some of them extended encounters such as festivals or protests we were both singing at, or concert tours we were doing together. Probably more than any other musician I know, Anne made a very regular habit of organizing tours with other musicians. Speaking as one familiar with the logistical details of these sorts of endeavors, I can say that many of these tours she did with other artists didn't end up paying as well as they probably would have if she had just done them by herself. But for Anne, whenever it was the least bit practical, the chance to reach a broader audience and to introduce another artist to her audience, the chance to do some more cross-pollinating, would generally win out over any other considerations. Like me, Anne did most of her touring by some combination of flying and driving, and generally staying with friends or gig organizers wherever she was going. Unlike me, Anne was very organized about not only organizing tours effectively, but on lining up nice lodging everywhere. She kept a frequently updated database of people she knew everywhere, with their guest room accommodations noted, indicating things like whether they had a hot tub in the backyard, whether the guest room had a comfortable bed in it or a springy fold-out couch, whether there was Wi-Fi. Whenever I'd be touring and our paths would intersect, she'd make sure to ask where I was heading and see if she knew anyone en route with especially nice digs for me to take advantage of. By some strange coincidence, Anne fell in love with a wonderful Swedish artist named Julie Leonardson around the same time as I got into a relationship with a European, and beginning in the late 90s, both Anne and I were spending a lot of time in Europe as well as touring in the U.S. Anne's main stopping grounds on that side of the Atlantic involved Sweden and Ireland. In Ireland, she led many trips for folks from the U.S. who wanted a guided tour of the island from someone with a lot of inside knowledge. I never managed to run into her in Ireland, but in Scandinavia, we shared many good times. In Copenhagen, during the COP15 events, Anne and her husband Julie were two of 900 or so people to be mass arrested during a march in Copenhagen. The next day, Anne and I were swapping songs on the back of a sound truck in another neighborhood in Copenhagen, wondering whether the hundreds of people marching along with the sound truck towards the prison might be mass arrested next. An electrifying atmosphere, that. And then it must have been that same year that we were touring throughout the Midwestern U.S. together for several weeks, playing for folkies, union activists, and the occasional punk. Months later, I was passing through Pennsylvania with Reiko and Layla, and we stopped to visit Anne in the hospital, where she was being treated for cancer. The first thing she did when she seemed to be recovering and was able to get around was organize the most wonderful week-long birthday party I've ever been to. So many of Anne's friends, who are in so many cases musicians I've admired for most of my life, rented cabins around a lake in Maryland for a week, gathering every day to swap songs and tell stories. As people who knew Anne or came to her shows over the past decade know, her health problems were getting in the way of a lot of things in her life. This recent fall wasn't the first bad fall. She also fell down the stairs to her basement and broke both her wrists some years ago, so her guitar playing suffered a lot after that, as did her memory for lyrics after all the cancer treatment. Her decline in health over the past decade happened to coincide with the decline of the music business, with many musicians who used to tour a lot no longer doing so for financial reasons, well prior to the pandemic. With Anne traveling much less, and many of her friends also traveling a lot less for other reasons, I, for one, saw a lot less of her in recent years than I used to. I'll forever be grateful to the folks who brought Anne and I to Madison a couple years ago. That would end up being the last time I'd see her in person, as there have been no paths crossing since. I was flown into Madison to do a little gig, and Anne was flown in just to tell stories. She graciously did just that. I think for everyone involved, it felt less like a gig than like the gig was an excuse for a bunch of people from disparate parts of a very large country to hang out together for a few days, which we did. But the location was fitting for our last visit with Anne in retrospect, if I'm going to get a little mystical about it for a moment. What I remember most are long conversations with Anne over breakfast about a wide variety of subjects, including the dismal state of U.S. politics, her broken water heater in Pittsburgh, and her unfinished book project. And the morning that Anne's hosts, the Berrymans, had to borrow a walker from a neighbor in order to help her get out of bed. That gig in Madison may have been an unusual one, but as with Utah Phillips gigs, a lot of people would have been there just for the stories regardless, which normally would anyway take up as much of a set of either Anne's or Utah's as the songs themselves would. Utah called Anne the best labor singer in America. Anne loved that quote, as any sane person would, and used to say it was not bad coming from the best labor singer in America. I agree with both of them. Thank you, Anne Feeney, for all the organizing, all the songs, all the encouragement, and all the good times. I wish I had not waited 2 weeks to call you back last time we played telephone tag, too late to reach you before you came down with COVID, then pneumonia, largely losing the ability to speak before you died. I was very glad to hear that Dan and Amy could be with you in the end, and that you were able to tell your beautiful husband, way off in Sweden, that you loved him. I wish the world were a smaller place. I'll be one of your many friends who will be both mourning and organizing in the time I've got left. Anne Feeney is dead. Long live Anne Feeney.
Dreamed I saw Anne Feeney, it was on a picket line, somewhere in the world where workers did combine, cheering on the strikers with a guitar in her hand, from Oregon to Ireland. Dreamed I saw Anne Feeney amid the foggy glow of the flashbang grenades outside the WTO, singing songs against the war at a military fort, or making arguments in court. I dreamed I saw Anne Feeney in the Texas hills, singing songs around a torch at Kerrville, crossing every bridge she could with the wheels of a car, with some CDs in the trunk, along with a guitar. I dreamed I saw Anne Feeney, I dreamed she never fell, she was in Baja with her grandkids doing swell, sharing free advice on how to find the cheapest flight so you can be throwing Swedish snowballs beneath the northern lights. Dreamed I saw Anfini get her first dose of vaccine instead of reading of the people who died of COVID-19. In the New York Times, nice things that they said, but I so much wish we could have had her still here instead. I dreamed I saw Anfini.
That was David Rovics, and thanks to him for the memories and the song. Bill Claus, who was for years KKFI's events coordinator and produces Radioactive Magazine on Tuesdays on KKFI, was a founder of the Heartland Labor Forum in 1989. He talks about a trip with co-founder Jack Hedrick, where he met Ann.
I first got to know Ann Feeney over 30 years ago when the late Jack Hedrick and I took a trip to Silver Springs, Maryland to go to the Great Labor Arts Exchange. The whole idea was to record events at the Great Labor Arts Exchange so we could air them on the then two-year-old Heartland Labor Forum that Jack and I helped found. Well, without going into a great deal of detail, let's just say that the Great Labor Arts Exchange is an overwhelming experience, and Jack and I had a little bit too much adult beverage and woke up on the carpet the next morning of one Anfini, a singer, songwriter, activist, and self-described hellraiser. That was the beginning of a friendship that lasted over 30 years, and our paths crossed many times over the years. My wife and I went to several of the Great Labor Arts Exchange, and then in the mid-90s, Anfini and my wife and I and about a dozen other labor activists did a bus tour of Sweden, where we visited such places as the birthplace of Joe Hill and actually got to see how a civilized country treats its workers. Ann made her living as a traveling musician. It was my pleasure to support her as much as I could with help from people like my friend Judy Ansel and Cross Currents of Culture and some of the labor unions in town. We brought Ann to Kansas City several times over the years. I know she played at the Carpenter's Hall, but over when it was on 39th Street. She played at IBEW Local 124. And whatever labor struggles were going on at the time, she would always be there to help out with that as well. Ann liked to joke from stage that she was a recovering attorney. But the truth of the matter is, she got her law degree in the first place as just another tool to fight for the things she believed in. And then to have the courage, and it takes a great deal of courage to do that, to give up a practice of being a trial lawyer and going out on the road and living by your wits and the hustle that it takes to be a recording artist and to make a living doing concerts. Ann developed cancer in 2010 and had to spend several years fighting that dreaded disease. Of course, it's kind of one of the ironies of life is that one of the things that she consistently fought for was for health care for all, among the many, many other causes. But, you know, if you are making your living as a traveling musician, chances are you may have some health care, but it's not going to be the best in the world, let's face it. So she was thought well enough of by a lot of people in labor that they came together and raised money to help cover her medical expenses. Ann is going to be missed. She was a fiery fighter for the good things in life and for the rights of working people and for the rights of the oppressed. And she had great values and she had a great talent. Writing songs that have a message is a very tricky business. If you don't do it right, you come off as preachy and teachy and didactic. She always did it right. She always did it with a lot of passion. And she was always able to bring the goods and to sell it to her audience. And she was quite the performer. And I'm going to miss her.
That was Bill Claus, and he told us his favorite song was We Just Come to Work Here, We Don't Come to Die. That's Mary Aereo's favorite song, too, but Ann didn't write it. It was written by Harry Stamper. Ann sings it here.
Chemicals clouding my brain. I want to keep all of my fingers and toes. May take you out to Coos Bay, Oregon, and if they do, be sure to look up Harry Stamper, the longshoreman who wrote this song when the Occupational Safety and Health Act, OSHA, first passed in 1970. Harry hoped it'd stop the annual slaughter of American workers, and it helped until 1980 when something mysterious and evil happened in Washington, D.C. Suddenly, those OSHA guys were nowhere to be found, and going to work can be more hazardous than ever to your health. Don't be one of the 58,000 American workers who are going to die this year from work-related injuries and illness. If your boss tells you to do something dangerous at work, there's only one of two things you can do. You can tell your boss what Harry Stamper told his boss, which you'll have to ask Harry about that. I can't tell you here. Or take a tip from Nancy Reagan and just say no.
No!
You know, we sat still through 8 years. Reagan watched OSHA brought down to his knees. Saw lots of union busting and watched our plants busting while our jobs were shipped overseas. But if Bush thinks we'll settle for more of the same, we're here to tell him that he better not try. Because we just come to work here, we don't come to die. You know, Mary Harris Jones was a top organizer, and her words still inspire me today. And if she took a look at our working conditions, well, I think I know what she would say. If you're talking about a worker's Memorial Day, mourn the dead while they're ringing the bell. But just remember Mother Jones when it comes to the living, and you know we gotta fight like hell. And while you're up there talking in an air-conditioned office on a telephone that OSHA approved, go on and tell me how much you've been spending on safety, pardon me.
This is the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Ansel, and it's our tribute to labor singer-songwriter Ann Feeney, who died of COVID last month. Our next memory of Ann is from Jeff Humfeld, another longtime Heartland Labor Forum activist, and more recently with Jaws of Justice, Mondays at 9 a.m. on KKFI. Jeff reflects on Ann's activism.
This is Jeff Humfeld. Shortly after I started volunteering with the Heartland Labor Forum, the last great labor battle of the 20th century happened. That was the Staley strike in Decatur, Illinois, that grew to include the Goodyear and Caterpillar workers. Half of the town of Decatur was on strike at one time or another over the course of those three strikes. Union workers, labor leaders, and activists from across the country would come to Decatur to participate in mass demonstrations and marches in support of those strikers. It was at the first of those gatherings that I met Ann Feeney. She was on a stage, or sometimes out in the crowd, playing her guitar and leading those around her to sing protest songs and bring her fighting spirit to the action of the day. While the Staley workers were sitting arms linked in the driveway to the plant, I was learning how to use a handheld cassette player to record the chants, interview those workers in attendance, and of course, the songs Anne was singing. Then the police started spraying tear gas on the workers seated in the driveway and in the crowd without regard for even the children. Anne climbed back up on the makeshift stage and sang louder than ever. I chased after those who had been gassed to get their stories of what had happened in the driveway. The Heartland Labor Forum traveled to Decatur two more times to cover not just the Staley strike, but the actions at Goodyear and Caterpillar. Anne was, of course, there again singing her song, War on the Workers, and so many others. There were thousands of workers and activists from across the nation that participated that day in a march from the Union Hall towards the gates of Staley once again. But before reaching Staley, the organizers stopped and did an about-face, marching back the opposite direction, with the rear becoming the front. The crowd marched more than a mile past the Goodyear plant to the gates of the Caterpillar plant. It was there that Anne Feeney showed everyone she was not just the troubadour of the movement, but was willing to make a stand for the movement. She passed over the medium of the divided road and laid down in front of the police cars that were there to keep the crowd on their own side. The police, of course, came and arrested her for not staying within the lines. She stood up for, or rather laid down for, her comrades and purposely got herself arrested for justice that day. I saw Anne a number of times over the years, have continued to play her music to inspire me, and I thought of her actions as I sat in a cell the day I went to jail for justice. What Anne Feeney did that day in Decatur will stick with me always.
This one is lyrics and music by Anne. And here she performs at the Unitarian Universalist Church in St. Augustine, Florida.
Frankly, if we think those gangsters who gathered for that healthcare summit are going to do anything for us on the healthcare front, we'd best be thinking again. The only way they're going to hear us is if we take to the streets, and I know there are a lot of you here who have some experience doing that, so I think you can testify with me. We have wonderful free speech rights in this country as long as we exercise those rights ineffectively. If our conduct might actually affect the outcome of anything, it's amazing how quickly we can be surrounded by police and paddy wagons and... So I decided if I was going to make a career out of this activism thing, I should have a song we could sing on our way to jail. This is it. Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong, so wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. The rotten law stays on the books, do folks like us defy it? Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. needs to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Next up is Michael Savoir, who's a longtime Heartland Labor Forum volunteer and retired UPS driver, member of the Teamsters. He introduces his favorite song.
It gives me great pleasure to reflect on the many contributions of Ann Feeney to the American labor movement in general, and specifically to each and every individual that she touched and inspired. No one would argue that Ann Feeney was not a modern-day Mother Jones. In keeping with that legacy, she was always there. Whenever there was labor, struggle, or strife, to inspire the rank and file to know whose side are you on. Ann's energy, spirit, and unrelenting love, combined with her powerful song, was perhaps a greater force than that of Mother Jones. More than a troubadour of labor, Ann was a poet, an educator, an artist, a songwriter, a labor leader, a lawyer, and a very real angel to those who knew her well. My fondest memories of Ann come from the many conferences and conventions, workshops and fundraisers that I had the pleasure of sharing with her. After an exhausting day of business, we would gather in the corner of a bar or the lobby of a hotel. She, with guitar in hand, would lead the group through the most satisfying part of the day, an evening with Ann Feeney. We often sang along. We would also swell with pride. We would occasionally tear up, but we always left inspired by the love, solidarity, and dedication instilled by an evening with Ann Feeney. If I were to pick my favorite song by Ann, it would likely be one that Ann didn't write, Sick Note. It was the infectious tale of an Irish lad, Paddy, working at a construction site where he was not appreciated or valued, doing the busy work that his boss hoped would encourage him to quit. Paddy struggles through his ordeal, the mission impossible, with the tenacity characteristic of a stereotypical Irishman. Battered, boogered, and broken, Paddy calls the boss to say, "Why, I won't be at work today."
Dear boss, I write this note to you to tell you of my plight, and at the time of writing I am not a pretty sight. My body is all black and blue, my face a deathly grey, and I write this note to say why Paddy's not at work today. Whilst working on the 14th floor, some bricks I had to clear. To throw them down from such a height was not a good idea. But then my foreman came along the bloody awkward sod, and he said I'd have to cart them down the ladder in me hod. Well, clearing all those bricks by hand, it seemed so very slow, that I hoisted up a barrel and secured the rope below. But in my haste to do the job, I was too dense to see that a barrel full of building bricks was heavier than me. And so when I untied the rope, the barrel fell like lead, and clinging tightly to the rope, I started up instead. I shot up like a rocket when, to my dismay, I found that halfway up I met that bloody barrel coming down. The barrel broke my collarbone as to the ground it sped, and when I reached the top, I banged the pulley with my head. Still clinging tightly, numb with shock from this almighty blow, when the barrel spilled out half its bricks 14 floors below. Now when those bricks had fallen from the barrel to the floor, I then outweighed the barrel, so I started down once more. Still clinging tightly to the rope, my body racked with pain, and halfway down I met that bloody barrel once again. The force of this collision halfway up the office block caused multiple abrasions and a nasty state of shock. Still clinging tightly to the rope, I thundered toward the ground and landed on the broken bricks the barrel scattered round. I lay there bleeding on the bricks. I thought I'd passed the worst. Then the barrel hit the pulley wheel and then its bottom burst.
A shower of bricks rained down on me. I hadn't got a hope. As I lay there groaning on the ground, I let go the bloody rope. The barrel then being heavier, it started down once more and landed right across me as I lay upon the floor. It broke 3 ribs in my left arm, and I can only say that I hope you'll understand why Paddy's not at work today.
You're listening to the Heartland Labor Forum's tribute show for Ann Feeney. This is Judy Ansel. And the next reminiscence is from my daughter, Carrie.
For me, Ann Feeney is the music of my childhood in many ways. I remember seeing her in Decatur on the picket line in, I think, 93. And I'd heard her music before, but this fiery, passionate woman just singing her heart out and everybody joining in because you couldn't not join in. She was just that great. And I played tapes of her music in my car as I, you know, got older and had access to a vehicle. I still have tapes of her music in my car. I have CDs. I have MP3s. Her music is timeless because, unfortunately, the workers' struggle is timeless. We keep fighting the same fights, and so the same songs are still really relevant. But the power is still there, the passion is still there, and it will be for as long as we need it. As I got older, I saw Ann perform in various places that I've lived, and every time it's kind of like coming home. You hear these songs, these stories, and it takes you back to other times in your life when other people were fighting fights and setting the path for justice. And other people will pick up the banner, but they're not going to be Anne, and she will be missed.
Carrie asked me to play one of her favorites, Ms. Ogeny. I still remember Anne singing this very feminist song in the 90s, literally strutting through the audience of beefy construction workers at the Carpenters Union. It didn't matter. They loved her.
Oh, it happened to Barbara Wolfowitz, but it could have happened to me. Her husband's name is Jules Lobel. She has a law degree. And the clients that she serves are victims of discrimination. But she joined her clients' ranks one day in the course of litigation. In the third week of a jury trial, the judge said to a witness, "I'm sick of all this Ms. nonsense. Tell me, are you Miss or Mrs.? And while we're on the subject, honey, let me ask you this. Just how does Mr. Wolfowitz feel about you using Ms.?" "Your Honor," answered Barbara, "I guess you must mean my dad. I am a married woman, but the only name I've had from the day that I was born, although I married Jules Lobel, is Wolfowitz. That's Wolfowitz, and I think it suits me well." Well, the Honorable Hubert Teitelbaum recoiled in indignation. What kind of man would tolerate such insubordination? Now my courtroom is my kingdom, and my orders will prevail. From now on, you're Mrs. Lubin, or you'll spend the night in jail. Now Lubin was a name the judge had pulled out of thin air. And some of you who hear this may think that was unfair. But what difference does it make if that was not her husband's surname. He might as well pick Lubin if he won't let her use her name. The story hit the paper, then the hit the fan, and people started asking more about this Stone Age man. Now who made a jerk like that a judge? Oh, come on, who put the fix in? It's another white male millionaire. Remember Richard Nixon? Now you might think this story is an isolated case, but misery in the courtroom is all too commonplace. So the next time that you go to vote, there's that pesky fly in the ointment. You're not just electing a president, but all of his appointments. I'm talking Rehnquist and Berger and Kennedy and Scalia and O'Connor. Is that one you supported? Then there's Carswell and Haynesworth and Ginsburg. They're the ones that we aborted. Once they're in, they're only out on high crimes or misdemeanors. And with George Bush in the White House, we've been looking at some real wieners.
That was Ms. Ogeny by Ann Feeney. Speaking of daughters, Anne's daughter, Amy Berlin, produced an album of Ann Feeney covers sung by Pittsburgh musicians and friends. On the notes, she wrote, "I decided to put together this tribute album for my mother, Ann Feeney, to honor the extremely hard work she has done for her whole life for the labor movement. Wherever there is a gigantic protest going on, you can always find my mom on the front lines raising hell. I have never witnessed a more powerful, dedicated, articulate, hilarious woman on this planet. Her music is a platform to educate and unite the people. There are many songs she has written that have become anthems sung by activists all over the world, including her song, Have You Been to Jail for Justice, recorded by Peter, Paul, and Mary. There are not enough people who dedicate their lives to fighting for equality and justice. But my mom is certainly doing everything in her power to create a better world for our future generations. No daughter could ever ask for a better role model than you, Mom, for teaching me to be a strong, educated woman with open eyes and a big heart." Our next memory is from Elise Bryant, who is the executive director of the Labor Heritage Foundation, another woman with a big heart.
"I don't remember what year it was, but Ann Feeney had been diagnosed with cancer and was at home in Pittsburgh. I called her up to ask if there was anything I could do to help in any way. And she answered immediately, 'Yes, you can drive me to Florida.' I was like, 'Oh, okay.' I mean, opened up my big mouth and offered, so I had to follow through. I picked up Ann in Pittsburgh, and we spent 2 days on the road together. Ann bought a stack of CDs with her. And I said, 'What are those for?' She said, 'Oh, so we can have some music to listen to.' And I said, 'Ann, I don't think we're going to be listening to music. I think we're going to be talking our way across the country,' which is what we did because we're both extroverts. And we told stories and swapped tales and shared things and just memorized and thought about all that had been going on between and amongst cultural workers in this country and the political nature of it. At one point during the drive, her husband, Yuli Leonardsson, called from Sweden, and the two of them talked on the phone for a good 20 minutes. And I just remember the love and joy on her face and his voice, which I could hear as they spoke to each other. We stopped, I can't remember where, in Savannah, I think, and then drove on to Florida and had a wonderful time. It was such a great sharing. I'd do it again in a heartbeat. And I hope to do it someday. And on that heavenly trail, who knows, we'll meet up again. Ann Feeney, presente."
That was Elise Bryant. Ann wrote this: In the early 90s, if you approached the town of Decatur, Illinois from any direction, you would see billboards saying, "You are now entering a war zone. Which side are you on?" UAW was on strike at Caterpillar. URW, that's the rubber workers soon to merge with the steel workers, was on strike at Bridgestone Firestone. And A.E. Staley workers were locked out. During the labor wars there, restaurants had signs in their windows saying, "No scabs," or "No cops," or "Discounts for strikers locked out." I made over a dozen trips to Southern Illinois during the Staley lockout. Road warriors from the lockout stayed at my home in Pittsburgh. I raised thousands of dollars for the workers at concerts and rallies all over the United States. War on the Workers became the theme song for the Staley workers, and in subsequent years, many other locked out and striking workers have adopted it as well. It is often played on Democracy Now! We're going to play part of War on the Workers, which is also Elise Bryant's favorite. This version is from the cover album and is sung by Chris Delane and Adam East.
Listen up, we've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. They've declared war on us, fight back, it's up to you. There's a war on the workers. There's a war on the workers. There's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more are gone. There's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
There's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
There's a war on the workers, and it's time we started calling the shots.
I saw an article by Mike Elk in his Payday Report, and I called him up and asked him if he would record it for me. He did more than that.
Ann Feeney to me was a real hero as a kid. I'd grown up a few blocks away, and our parents were friends. They helped organize rallies in the UE. And, you know, I was saying that in many ways, you know, Mr. Rogers grew up near where I grew up. I saw Ann Feeney as a young child in a similar sense. It was almost like seeing a neighborhood celebrity, because of how excited she would get people in our community when she played union rallies. So the following is a story I wrote about renaming a park after her. Frick Park should be renamed to honor labor activist Ann Feeney. As the owner of a crowdfunded labor publication, Payday Report, I found myself confronted with a rough dilemma when I attempted to host our annual Labor Day barbecue in Pittsburgh. The park where we're holding the event is named after Henry Clay Frick. Frank Goldsmith, 78, who rode with the old members of the United Electrical Radio Machine Workers, UE, including Ernie DeMeo, during some of the ugliest days of McCarthyism and as a close advisor to Payday Report, emailed me to express concern that we were advertising the event as being hosted at Frick Park. Frank, a native of Johnstown, despises Frick, who was responsible for over 2,000 deaths in the 1888 Johnstown flood. Additionally, Frick hired the Gun Thugs, who later killed 7 strikers during the Battle of Homestead. Let's just say that for a labor publication to host an event at a park that honors a mass murderer like Frick isn't exactly a good look. This led me to wonder, then who should the park be named after? Then I saw Anna Feeney's obituary in the Washington Post. There was a beautiful photo of Anne in the woods at Frick Park, and it was clear to me that the park should be called Anna Feeney Park. As a kid growing up in a UE family, near where the old switch and signal factory was in Swissville, Anne was a constant presence in my life at Union Barbecues. I spent a lot of time with Anne. 2013, when she was on her first tour post-cancer recovery, she invited me to travel with her crew in an RV, and I have a lot of great stories about her love of the road and how she was broke throughout that trip and had to pass the hat. Despite performing more than 4,000 shows in her lifetime and spreading the union message, often playing for just $2.50 a show, Anne was never a commercial success. As a child, I went to so many union rallies where Anne would really pick up the spirits of workers in tough fights. Her music was dancey, kind of honky-tonk, and Anne knew how to get a crowd going. The UE would book her for all its rallies, and I still know all the words because she could get a crowd of 1,000 blue-collar guys singing anti-capitalist songs. Catherine Grider told me that when her father, Bill Grider, the great labor reporter, was dying, he had this vivid, drugged-up hallucination that he was at a union barbecue. I love to think that somewhere Anne, Bill, and so many brothers and sisters are singing and hanging out at a great Union barbecue. And I can think of no better way to honor someone who played so many Union barbecues than to rename the park after Ann. Ann was a Yinzer Jinzer who represented the best traditions of this city, and the park should be named for her. So from now on, when you send out invites for picnics, just call it Ann Feeney Park.
That was Mike Ilk. We're out of time, and there are so many more songs we love. My favorite is Kilkenny, Ireland on Ann's Enchanted Way album, which shows off her Irish roots. Check it out. The music is beautiful. Thanks to all the contributors on this show, and thanks especially to Ann, who we will miss every time we hear her songs. The good thing is that Ann's music didn't die, and it will live on the Heartland Labor Forum, in union halls, and picket lines. There will be a celebration of life service for Ann on Saturday, April 3rd, 2021 at 3 p.m. and will be streamed live on Zoom. For reservations, email annfeeneymemorial@gmail.com. This has been the Heartland Labor Forum. Tune in next week. Our show is called What Difference Does a Union Make? Ask Guatemalan Banana Workers and Organizing Amazon in Alabama. The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. Stay tuned for the Thursday night special. Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI. The common man's rights to be in the working class is good.